Hi, you're listening to Record of Change. My name is Stephanie Rabel, and I'm your host for this episode. Record of Change features stories from individuals from across the world and how their lives are being shaped by the COVID-19 pandemic. We listen to our interviewees at several points in time because we want to follow their lives and how they're changing. This season, we'll have a mixture of some new and familiar voices and stories. Today, I'm talking to you from Delaware in the United States, where 38% of our state's residents are fully vaccinated and 50% have received a first dose of a two-dose vaccine. This episode is particularly special for me because this is my first episode being recorded after being fully vaccinated myself, but I'll save my thoughts on this for our next recap episode. Today, we'll listen to Aaron Levine, a comedian in London, England, at a time when COVID-19 and its impacts seem to be moving in a positive direction, especially since our last check-in in January. Even though it's been 4 months since our last conversation, so much has shifted. Both Aaron and his wife have received one shot of the vaccine, his wife will receive her second shortly, and Aaron is awaiting notification of his second dose. The vaccine has helped them both feel a sense of ease. Despite the UK's low numbers, they still don't feel fully comfortable returning to normalcy. In this episode, we'll explore his thoughts behind it all, his take on haircuts, travel, the comedy scene, and the royals. Let's listen. Hi, Aaron. So the last time that we spoke was actually back in January. So it's really good to see you again. How's life been treating you since then? What's new?
I don't know, really. I mean, time is still a blur. I'm definitely taking a lot more kids' book courses. I've taken some courses and I'm taking more. And I'm starting to write a book about a kid with ADHD. Apparently, I write for 8 to 12-year-olds naturally, according to my teacher. So I don't know what that says about me, but that's what I'm doing. I've been researching that and I'm pretending to be a writer because that's what you do with ADHD. You've got like a whiteboard and like a board with post-it notes that I'm going to plot out something on. It makes me feel very proper having all that stuff. Whether I use it or not, I don't know. But
I currently have a cork board that is in a closet. It does make me feel so official, like my thoughts mean something.
Yeah, exactly. It solidifies them, doesn't it?
It almost validates when everything is a little larger and very public looking.
Yes, this is important and it's going to mean something.
Yeah, I remember you saying that you were taking a variety of different classes throughout this time and experimenting, but it seems like the current one that you're in is for the children's book.
Yeah, I've written lots of bits and it has yet to form a cohesive whole, hence the board with the post-it notes. I've got lots of little chapters. At the moment, it would be a bit like Winnie the Pooh, AML, a bunch of different little short stories in one book. But I wouldn't mind if there was a plot. It's like very nice little, you know, Charlie eats his eggs. And there's a little story about him being a cat in the road and getting distracted and he's late for school. And yeah, it doesn't sound like much, but they're all very detailed and quite funny. So I'm quite pleased. Yeah.
It sounds like you have all these little stories within the story. I wanted to actually ask you about any material that you've either been revamping during this time, any new materials?
I've been able to test out a few things online, but it's not really the same. I've been writing lots and lots of stuff, not necessarily about COVID, but stuff about marriage, stuff about weight loss. So I've lost quite a lot of weight, but I'm still fat. I've gone from very, very fat to very fat. But like my friend complaining to me about, you know, he's like really pleased with himself because he's lost 2 pounds, but that's like a huge percentage of his body weight. Like 2 pounds for me is like what I sneeze. Just like people who think they're fat, like they have no idea. You have no idea, mate. And like you're losing weight. People think, oh, I'll just go on a diet. It'll be easy. It won't, you know, but you're physically losing a part of yourself. You wouldn't like amputate a limb and expect it not to be painful, you know? That's more or less what you're using physical, part of your physical being by losing weight. But I'm working on that stuff, but I don't know if it'll work out in the real world.
What has it been like to lose weight over this last year?
One of the reasons I don't lose weight is because I get distracted from things easily by comedy or by going out and socializing or whatever. And because there's been no socializing, there's been nothing else for me to do. So I've just been able to focus on it. I've started to enjoy exercise. I never thought I'd be one of those people, but I'm starting to get a little bit addicted to it. I don't like it if I miss a session. And I like strength work. In the last week, couple of weeks, I've discovered strength work, before I was just doing fitness stuff. I like having muscles and feeling solid. Mm-hmm. In the back of my head, I was like worried because I'm a fat guy. Like a lot of my material was about being fat. And like, I don't lose my identity. That's who I am. I'm the fat jolly guy. You know, I'm one of those fat jolly comedians. It's a type, right? Mm-hmm. And like, I don't want to lose weight and lose my identity, but I've realized I can kind of replace it with muscle if I want to. I don't know if it'll ever happen. I mean, I was never going to waste away, so I don't know what I was so panicking about, but...
So when I was talking to you in January, it was right as they were kind of deeming it, the UK variant was just on a spike. There were some vaccinations happening, but it wasn't to the scale that has happened, I'm imagining now.
January was scary. It was right after Christmas. The numbers were way up and we'd gone right back into another lockdown. And that was tough. It was really tough because we'd been through it twice already. It was like our third lockdown. And it was winter and there was no socializing outside. It was just a lot harder than the other two lockdowns. It was miserable, but I got through it somehow, I guess, with the courses and things and just giving myself things to do. But now the sun's out, I'm meeting my family outside, letting the odd person in the house. You're not really supposed to, but our numbers, we're having like 10 deaths a day and 1,000 new cases a day. The numbers are down something like 90% on what they were in January. So they're like way down. I've had one jab. Most of the people I know have had at least one jab because they're all over 40. And it feels easier. I mean, they've still got the 2 meter rules. Not everything's open. The cinemas aren't open yet. And for me, the comedy clubs aren't open yet. I just went to the barbershop for the first time since the first lockdown because Steph's been doing it for me, my wife. Mm-hmm. But she's really tired of having to do it because it's a weekly thing and she's bored. She trained me. Unfortunately, what happens is I do it in this office that I'm sitting in right now, and I take off my t-shirt because Steph yells at me because the hair goes everywhere. So she makes me bring the vacuum cleaner up. I sort of do it half naked in my underwear while she shaves my head. But I tend to like fall asleep on her belly and also feel her boobs. And I've been doing it for a year. So she's like, Erin, if you go to the barbershop, do not feel the barber's boobs. Because it's just an automatic instinct, right? I fall asleep while she does it because she's like touching my head, isn't she? And the wife's touching your head and it's so soothing, you know? So I had to not, you know, fall asleep and reach around to the barber's boobs. I don't think he would have appreciated it.
I've also been doing the at-home haircuts. It's actually a very stressful process. I'm doing scissor cuts, so there's some high stakes there. It hasn't gone well many times, but the stakes are low in terms of the publicity of it. So what's it like to be out in the real world now? What's that been feeling like to make that transition back to some sense of normalcy?
I don't like it very much. I've been thoroughly institutionalized. I'm used to my safe space. I feel very much like a creature coming out of its shell, and you know, I just want to scurry back to the shell. It's, you know, I'm safe again. When I get back home, I'm relieved. I was like, wow, I ventured out into, someone could have coughed on me, I could have died. I feel like I'm sort of a hero for going outside. Like I'm in a hero movie. I've gone out to Camden High Street and faced the droplets of death that someone could cough on you at any moment. So it feels a bit like that. I've got a bit of an imagination, so I don't like it very much. Like we had, and even just the energy levels, like we had a couple, about 2-3 days ago, we had a couple friend come over and they stayed about 3 or 4 hours. And then my niece came over immediately afterwards and helped me build this keyboard.
You were talking about that you have a gig booked for October. I assume that means that you're somewhat hopeful for the future.
I'm not confident of Fringe. I've delayed my deposit another year. I'm not going to be doing it personally. It's a little bit sooner than October. In theory, we should be gigging again from June, and some of my friends are booking gigs that early. I'm taking a more cautious wait-and-see approach. We'll see. I'm worried. The government keeps giving these messages that you know, there's going to be another wave. It's inevitable. Well, if there's going to be another wave, why should I get excited and start booking stuff? And I'm really into my writing right now. When the niece and nephew came over and the couple, me and Steph were exhausted afterwards. For a day, we just hid upstairs in the bedroom because we weren't used to that kind of social expenditure. But one of the things I've got to say about these classes is the majority of them, I'm the only guy. It's just me and like a bunch of sort of middle-aged ladies. And I really love it. I really love the social aspect of the classes. Like all the mums being all, they've all got their cups of tea. It's just very cozy and they come and they're very encouraging. We want to see another chapter, Aaron. Oh, we like your character. He's very real. He's very imaginative. And I like all the feedback. I just like the social aspect. They're just lovely people, all of them. And they've got three or four different classes, different bunches of old ladies. They're all the same age range. I don't know what it is about this particular university, but I love it, man. It's like I'm getting my mother issue sorted out by groups of large numbers of middle-aged women, but I'm also getting a lot of very good feedback for my writing as well, and they'll come down on me if I'm not.
It was one the other day.
I wrote a scene set in a lab. The character was 10 years old, and he was saying that the smell of children's sweat hung in the air, and they were like, but you wouldn't say that, you're 10. To you, it's not children's sweat, it's just sweat. They just come down on little details. It's really good, you know? So it's really interesting.
That's something that is very iconic of Zoom world.
Mm.
These are probably communities that you might not have ever intersected with.
I would never have met these guys before. Not in a million years. No. No chance. I might not have gone up and talked to her. Whereas when she's in my house, in my living room, and she's talking to me directly through my screen, because of the way Zoom works, there's more eye contact. I'm getting to know these people better.
Do you think we're going to have a new category of friendships after this?
Zoom friends.
Zoom friends. I feel like we've all made these unusual friendships and had to pause our lives, and we now have this other realm of friends that we would have never had. Do you feel like, can you imagine what this group of friends is going to be like for you moving forward?
Yeah. Well, one of the classes is finished already, and we've kept a WhatsApp group going, and we meet once a month on Zoom. So that it could be like that, you know. I don't know how long it will last for, how long we'll stay focused for. And it'd be weird to meet these people in real life because you're so intimate with them through Zoom. You wouldn't want to be that intimate if you met them in real life because you'd be out in a coffee shop somewhere. It'd just feel weird. But the Zoom thing feels more like a novel, like you're reading a novel, whereas meeting someone in person feels like television, which is weird. You would think it was the other way around, but there's a level, for me, there's a level of depth to my Zoom conversations, particularly in this class. Maybe it's the sort of safe environment of a writer's class that's making it feel like that. But there's a level of depth that when I go out and hang out with my friends in a pub, it's just, oh, what's on the football? You know, Man United, whatever. There's no... You know, I was abused as a child. There's none of that, not really. So, yeah.
No, it's interesting because, especially because of how much time you spend with these people, I do think even in person classes, it was more transactional. You would go for a purpose, you'd kind of talk about things, you'd leave. But now we're all in our home context. So it's kind of like home bleeds in with where we are on Zoom. So it just feels as though we have conversations about things that are about our lives. The UK has also been getting some additional notoriety in terms of news, royal news, more than usual. Mm-hmm. So what is the sentiment there? Are you and Steph interested in the royals and what's happening? And any thoughts towards that?
I'm not a big follower of the royals. Steph is more. I think it's an American thing, maybe. You Americans love it. But then the crown and all that was very big over here as well. Steph, like, watched the whole funeral of Philip. I think he was, again, abused as a child and had a terrible childhood. Makes most people's childhoods look like wine and roses. And as a result, was a cantankerous man who needed a lot of therapy and never got it, because that's not what you did if you were British. But, I mean, that's sort of my opinion on Philip. All his grandkids and great-grandkids are going to have issues from that. And it's just a very weird way to make a family. You're like, it's done for political reasons, and there's all this responsibility and all this weird kind of breeding. But, you know, the royals are going to be messed up, man. And it's kind of soap opera-y. I suppose I do have an opinion. I like that Harry struck out on his own, and who's doing his own thing. And I don't know. I don't think Megan's perfect. I suspect she's a bit of a narcissist to a certain extent and a bit of a diva and someone who would need a good green room bag of goodies. But I also think she's probably trying to do the right thing and she's not that bad for Harry and no one's all bad, are they? Royalty is an odd concept, but I also think democracy is an odd concept as well. Unless you're going to... I think people need to be trained better to rule. Because they just not... I think they need to be trained from birth. I think it's a really, really hard job. And I think there should be some serious vetting. And you can have democracy and you can have people vote people in, but those people should be qualified. And no one's qualified. Everyone messes it up. And they've all got psychological issues that they haven't dealt with. And I think to become a leader of a country, you should have had some serious therapy and taken on responsibility for your own issues. So you don't project those issues out onto things that are going to affect thousands and thousands of millions of people. There's more vetting to be a doctor or an airplane pilot than there is to run a country, and you're going to affect a much greater number of people. You know, I don't even know if they have CRB checks, you know, criminal record background checks. I don't even know if they do that. I don't know what the vetting process is. I'm sure, the newspapers would pick up on anything dodge.
I don't know if it's too soon to ask, because we'll be speaking to you in a few months, but do you have a post-COVID strategy? Are you there yet? How do you want to re-engage with the world post-COVID?
I've talked with Steph about it, and we think that if we both had our jabs, 2 weeks after the jabs, we will go to a cinema. But it will be one of the posher cinemas. So not a chain, but like one of the small independents that have armchairs, because she thinks they might be cleaned better.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we'll wear masks and we'll watch a film and that'll be okay. Numbers dependent. We'll do what we can do and live as much as we can with conditions, you know. I mean, it seems incredibly unlikely, statistically. The reality is a tiny percentage of people have COVID, and then of that tiny percentage, another tiny percentage of that tiny percentage get ill enough to go to hospital, and then from that lot, another tiny percentage of that tiny percentage of the tiny percentage die. So your chances of dying, even if you're fat, are really low. But yeah, it's sort of made everyone a bit anxious. It's made me and Steph a bit anxious. It's going to affect our behaviour and our decisions, and we're going to be a bit more cautious. We'll only go somewhere if there's metering and distancing and you know, people are wearing masks for now. But we'll see. The government over here saying in July they're going to get rid of social distancing. So we'll see. We'll see if that third wave happens, and the fourth wave it'll be. And we'll see if the numbers go back up. But it seems like vaccinations are working, and maybe we can get back to reality. So take it slowly is the tactic. In Asia, before COVID, people were already wearing masks. And I think that will become the same over here now. I think there will be some behaviour changes.
I know here in the States, there's a lot of vaccine hesitancy. And I give a deep sigh because I feel like this has been happening more and more in pockets of people that I love than I'd like to admit. Is that something that you're seeing a bit in the UK? Do you feel like there's enough vaccines being dosed out at this point to feel like there's a sense of comfort, or is there a good constituent of folks that are still hesitant towards getting a vaccine?
I haven't seen much in the way of vaccine hesitation myself. I don't think there's as much as hesitancy here as there is in the States. So yeah, here are the numbers for the UK. So you can see 51% have had at least one vaccine at the top there.
Mm-hmm.
And there was only one daily death yesterday. Yeah, the numbers are good.
Oh.
So I don't think, you know, given that half the population has had one jab, that would suggest there isn't too much. And there's still a long way to go in terms of, like, they're still working their way through the ages. That would suggest there isn't too much in the way of hesitancy in the UK. I know there's a lot of it where my wife comes from, which is Western New York, the small towns, brother's not so keen on getting one. But then Steph had a dream where her mum came to her and said, make sure your brother gets it. And so she told her brother that, and her brother said, ask her what the lotto numbers are. Which I thought was a fantastic joke. I thought it was so good. But he's going to get one now. But I don't know what the hesitancy stems from. I put a little Facebook thing on my Facebook thing saying I'd gotten the jab. you know, you can put a frame around your mm-hmm. face, your profile picture. And quite a few Americans were like, oh, so three of your friends aren't in hospital from it then. And someone's, you know, you don't know a bunch of people who have died from it then. And I'm like, no, do you? I don't know. I don't know, man. Although I sometimes joke and say that since I've had a jab, I've suddenly wanted to switch from Apple to Microsoft for no reason. But you know, the whole Bill Gates conspiracy theory.
Do you have any other fun plans for the summer?
Not yet, because we're still not just... It's so uncertain. We just don't know... I just want to see how the numbers are once... So, in this country, I think mid-June is, like, the date that everything turns off. Like, all social distancing stops, or maybe July. But certainly June is, like, one of the big steps. They reopen cinemas May the 19th, actually. But between now and July, everything's reopening and everything. So then I want to wait 5 weeks from that date and see what happens in terms of, like, making plans to, like for my wedding present, my aunt and uncle bought us a stay in a posh hotel in the countryside in this beautiful... But we haven't been able to do it because, like, we didn't book it in time before the lockdown. And, you know, so I've still got this sort of $300 credit note to a posh hotel, which would be lovely. It'd be like a romantic getaway for a weekend, but I can't use it. Can't do anything like that. But I suppose we could drive somewhere. Yeah, maybe. We just haven't gotten around to thinking about it yet because of the uncertainty is the very long-winded answer to that question.
No, I fully understand. As someone who hasn't really gone anywhere in what, I haven't been counting, 14, 15 months, I do feel like that resonates very closely with me. I feel as though we're all in a stage that if we've taken this very, very seriously, it does feel like kind of navigating the post-COVID world is a big, big challenge. I'm looking forward to hearing how things unfold for you, though, in a few months. Aaron, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Thanks for interviewing me. It's always fun. Thanks, Stephanie.
This was episode 5 of our 4th season with Aaron Levine from London. Stay tuned for our following episode of Record of Change, when we'll hear from Joaquin, a lawyer from Santiago de Chile, for the first time. If you like this episode of Record of Change, or Record of Change in general, we would love to hear your feedback, and even more so if you're willing to share it with your networks. Please follow us on your favorite podcast provider, or on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, or our website, recordofchange.com. This podcast is implemented with and by the members of the Bosch Alumni Network, a community that brings together former and current fellows, grantees, and staff members of the Robert Bosch Stiftung and its partners. Thank you for listening.